Welcome inside of this week's edition of What's Important Now. I'm Tom Sears, and I hope all of you are well. I know we've been in north central West Virginia battling power outages and weather and all those things. I hope all of you are well out there. If you'd like to contact us, please do so by email at whatsimportantnowradio@gmail.com. whatsimportantnowradio@gmail.com. Also, you can write us at What's Important Now Radio, 8901 Good Hope Pike, Lost Creek, West Virginia, 26385. Okay. And there's been some increased activity on Facebook, so don't forget to check us out there as well. Okay, we're going to try to start something new here. I'm toying with this. I love it. As most of you know, I am passionate about my country and about my faith, and I love it when they both come together. So there's an organization that puts out something called the American Minute, and it can be found at AmericanMinute.com. And I get these emails, and I recommend them for those of you that love American history. And the thing about airing on Sunday is that there's so many days in between programs. So I'm going to try to highlight some of the American Minute emails that I have received this past week. And I'm going to jump all the way back to March the 1st and read about the Articles of Confederation. What was the government in the United States before the U.S. Constitution was written? It was the Articles of Confederation and Perpetual Union, which were introduced in the Continental Congress July the 12th, 1776, a little over a week after Congress approved the Declaration of Independence. Now, after a long debate, the Articles of Confederation were approved on November 15, 1977, and sent to the states for ratification. The Articles of Confederation were an attempt to loosely knit 13 states together, though leaving most of the authority under each individual state's jurisdiction. The Articles of Confederation granted to Congress the power to raise armies, declare war, and sign treaties. It withheld from Congress the power to raise revenue through taxes or regulate trade or collect tariffs. The Articles of Confederation were signed by such statesmen as John Hancock, Samuel Adams, Roger Sherman, John Witherspoon, Richard Henry Lee, Robert Morris, John Dickinson, Daniel Carroll, and Governor Morris. The original states finally ratified the Articles of Confederation on March the 1st, 1781. So a little bit of history there. If we take a look at March the 3rd, Congress adopted the Star-Spangled Banner as the national anthem. It was written by Francis Scott Key during the War of 1812. The fourth verse includes the lines, "Oh, thus be it ever when free men shall stand between their loved home and war's desolation. Blessed the victory and peace, may the heaven-rescued land praise the power that hath made and preserved us a nation. Then conquer we must when our cause it is just, and this be our motto, in God we trust." Thought I'd share that with you. And again, there's so much more about that on the American Minute website, again found at AmericanMinute.com. March the 4th was the presidential inauguration day from 1793 till 1933, when it was changed by the 20th Amendment to January 20th. Many presidents gave warnings in their inaugural addresses. James Monroe on March the 4th, 1817, said this, "It is only when the people become ignorant and corrupt, when they degenerate into a populace, that they are incapable of exercising the sovereignty. Usurping is when an easy attainment and a usurper soon found. The people themselves become willing instruments of their own debasement and ruin." Franklin Pierce said on March the 4th, 1853, "The dangers of a concentration of all power in the general government of a confederacy so vast as ours are too obvious to be disregarded. You have a right to expect your agents in every department to regard strictly the limits imposed upon them by the Constitution. Liberty rests upon a proper distribution of power between the state and federal authorities. Abraham Lincoln said on March the 4th, 1861, "The candid citizen must confess that if the policy of the government upon vital questions affecting the whole people is to be irrevocably fixed by decisions of the Supreme Court, the instant they are made, the people will have ceased to be their own rulers, having to that extent practically resigned their government into the hands of the imminent tribunal." And finally, Theodore Roosevelt said on March the 4th, 1905, "If we fail the cause of free self-government throughout the world, we will rock to its foundations, and therefore our responsibility is heavy to ourselves, to the world, as it is today, and the generations yet unborn." Again, much more found at AmericanMinute.com. And finally, the French and Indian War ended in 1763, the French losing Canada and all their land east of the Mississippi River. King George III decided to leave troops in the American colonies in case of future French incursions or native uprisings. British troops were to be paid with taxes collected from the colonies, the sugar tax of 1764, the stamp tax of 1765, and the Townshend Acts of 1767, taxing glass, paint, and paper. As the colonies had no representative in Parliament, the cry arose, "No taxation without representation." The king imposed writs of assistance in 1765, allowing British authorities to arrest anybody, anytime, anywhere, on any suspicion, read their personal correspondence, and detain them indefinitely. Citizens could have their houses, property, and farms taken without a warrant or due process. As there were no barracks, British troops forcibly entered into colonist homes and lodged or quartered in them, leaving families to live in barns, basements, or even attics. On March the 5th, 1770, a mob formed in Boston to protest, and in the confusion, British troops fired into the crowd, killing five, one of which was the African-American patriot Crispus Attucks. This became known as the Boston Massacre. Wow. So there's a little bit of history going back in time. I, again, find that information, AmericanMinute.com. And I think that knowing where we came from is, well, vitally important. Woodrow Wilson said something along the lines that if we don't know where we've been, well, there's no way of knowing where we're going. This past week, I've been talking about on our ad for the program about the historical relationship of the United States of America and Israel. Here's the thing. What we've witnessed this past week, in many ways, is a tragedy. Benjamin Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, came and he spoke to a joint session of Congress for the third time. It's historical in that the only other person to have done so was Winston Churchill. And of course, well, you know what was going on in those days. Benjamin Netanyahu, basically, he laid out a warning. This proposed deal coming from the Obama administration that very well could fast-track Iran to developing a nuclear weapon. Number one, when he was first running for office, he said, "I will stop them from developing." There's been little done. He wants to sit down and have tea and crumpets with a group of people that hate Israel. And don't be deceived, they hate America too. Benjamin Netanyahu standing up, and in many ways, in my opinion, and I watched the entire speech, was begging America not to do this. But he said something that I found very interesting. He said, "If no one else stands with us, if Israel stands alone, we will stand." Well, Israel won't stand alone. And as he went on to say, America will stand with her. But what we have witnessed during this Obama administration is that there has been a distancing between America and Israel. I mean, the United States and Israel, for the most part, up until really, again, I think, until the Obama administration, have been the closest of friends and allies. And to give President Obama credit, Benjamin Netanyahu made it very clear that there are things that President Obama has done for Israel that many people will never know about. And I believe that. So let me say that. But Benjamin Netanyahu stood before a joint session of Congress, and President Obama made it political. No one from his administration attended the speech. And then after the speech was over, there was what I thought an attack on Benjamin Netanyahu from our president, as he declared that he offered no alternatives and so on and so forth. But because I only have a 30-minute program, and this may go into next week, it very well may, but I need to get to the historical relationship. Number one, why has there been such a strength in the U.S.-Israel alliance? Well, I believe that it's rooted in the values that we share, the two nations share. Historically speaking, Israel has been state-building for over six decades, really seven decades. They've looked to the United States for political inspiration. They've needed our financial and military assistance. And by the way, Benjamin Netanyahu declared for the first time in a long time, Israel can defend itself. They've also looked to us for diplomatic support, and that's really what we're beginning to say. This political inspiration, it's dwindling. This diplomatic support is dwindling. But Americans, we have viewed Israel with a special appreciation. We've admired their longing for Western democratic tradition. We've found their economic development to be remarkable. And we have stood with them against their enemies. If you were not a friend of Israel, we were not a friend of yours. Obviously, that's changed as we are trying to make friends with Iran, who hates us. Lyndon Johnson said to a Soviet premier when asked why the U.S. supported Israel so much. As the Soviet premier Kosygin said, 80 million Arabs exist and only 3 million Israelis exist. Why do you support them? Lyndon Johnson said, quote, because it's right, end of quote. Now, this admiration, it's something that goes back all the way to the beginning and the foundations of our country. Jewish tradition had an influence, really a profound influence, on our founding fathers. John Adams said to Thomas Jefferson in a letter, quote, I will insist that the Hebrews have done more to civilize man than any other nation. End of quote. According to Woodrow Wilson, the ancient Jewish nation provided a model for the American colonists, recalling the previous experiences of the colonists and applying the Mosaic Code to the order of their internal life. It is not to be wondered at that the various passages in the Bible that serve to undermine royal authority, stripping the crown of its cloak of divinity, held up before the pioneer Americans the Hebrew Commonwealth as a model government. In the spirit and essence of our Constitution, the influence of the Hebrew Commonwealth was paramount in that it was not only the highest authority of the principle that rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God, but also because it was in itself a divine precedent for a pure democracy. as distinguished from monarchy, aristocracy, and any other form of government. End of quote. Again, that was Woodrow Wilson. President Calvin Coolidge paid tribute to their role in the War of Independence. Quote, "The Jews themselves, of whom a considerable number were already scattered throughout the colonies, were true to the teaching of their prophets. The Jewish faith is predominantly the faith of liberty." End of quote. One original design for the official seal for the United States was submitted by Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, and John Adams. It depicted the Israelites crossing the Red Sea and Pharaoh in pursuit, with Moses standing on the other side. The motto was to have been, quote, "Rebellion to tyrants is obedience to God," end of quote. Another seal was chosen, but the Liberty Bell does bear an inscription from the Old Testament. It says, quote, "And proclaim freedom throughout the land unto all the inhabitants thereof," end of quote. That's Leviticus 25:10. It took 2,000 years to resurrect Hebrew as a spoken language. Hebrew was actually a prerequisite for early American scholars. Many universities even required it in their curriculum. Hebrew was compulsory at Harvard until 1787, and to this day, Yale's insignia bears the phrase, Hebrew phrase. And I cannot pronounce it, but oracle learning. So you see, ladies and gentlemen, what we have here is a relationship that goes back to the founding of our country, all the way back before Israel was a nation again. Our founding fathers believed. And it really just once again points to the fact that the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I want to say that again, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob had a profound influence on our country, on our leaders, on our founding fathers who wrote things like the Articles of Confederation and ultimately wrote the Constitution of the United States of America. See, our history runs together. It could be argued, and I have listened to a lot of people say this, that President Obama wants to destroy everything America has been. He wants to create a new America. He's been quoted as saying that he believes the Constitution is a flawed document that needs changed. This document that has held us together, setting on a foundation that has been, and hear me clearly, has been the precious scriptures, the Holy Bible, the Word of Almighty God, has held that Constitution, held it up. Benjamin Franklin warned that if at any point we became a nation that turned their back on God, the Constitution could not stand. He said it was written for a moral people, and the best teacher of morality is the Holy Bible. Check it out. Look it up. If you don't believe the things I'm saying, there's a historical record. I love, and I mentioned this last week, I love how people look at American history and they try to say, well, this is what they meant. This was the intent of the founding fathers. And they set on their thrones of this, in my mind, their own preconceived notions of wisdom and knowledge. And they sit there and they try to determine, try to get into the minds of the founding fathers and to tell us as Americans what the founding fathers must have meant. I take a different approach. I don't try to get into their heads because it's impossible. What I try to do is go back and look at historical record, like the congressional record, and I read what they said. Because, ladies and gentlemen, people say what they think. Eventually, our founding fathers had a track record of it, fighting for the independence of our country, and they understood that the Jewish people were fighting for their survival as well. See, our historical friendship and relationship goes all the way back, even before Israel became a nation again. Americans' support for the Jewish people to return to their homeland, it goes back to the colonial period as well. As John Adams wrote, quote, "I really wish the Jews again in Judea, an independent nation for, as I believe, the most enlightened men of it have participated." John Quincy Adams wrote, quote, "Rebuilding of Judea as an independent nation," end of quote. Even after the Emancipation Proclamation, President Abraham Lincoln met a Canadian Christian Zionist, Henry Wentworth Monk, who expressed hope that Jews who were suffering oppression in Russia and in Turkey be emancipated, quote, "by restoring them to their national home in Palestine," end of quote. Lincoln said this was a noble dream and one shared by many Americans, end of quote. The president said that he knew a Jewish person who had so many times put up on my feet that I would have no objection to giving his countrymen a leg up. In 1883, Emma Lazarus, the poet whose words are inscribed on the Statue of Liberty, wrote that Palestine should be a, quote, excuse me, be as a, quote, home for the homeless, a goal for the wanderer, and an asylum for the persecuted and a nation of the denationalized, end of quote. In 1891, there were angers incited by Tsar Alexander III, who provoked an outcry by many prominent Americans, including the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court and Speaker of the House, Reverend William E. Blackstone, and Cardinal Gibbons, presented a petition signed by those who were concerned about the fate of the Jews in Russia to President Benjamin Harrison and Secretary of State James Blaine. They called for the first international conference to consider the Israelite claim to Palestine as their ancient home and to promote any other just and proper way of alleviation of their suffering and condition. Founding fathers, ladies and gentlemen, of our country, they believed that the Jewish people deserved their own nation. We are living in a time today where we are witnessing more and more of their land being given away. A nation that has declared that they want to annihilate Israel, to wipe them off the map, to take them out of world history, that nation being Iran. We are sitting at the table and trying to work out a deal. As Benjamin Netanyahu said, if they want a deal, tell them to quit supporting terrorism. Tell them to start acting like a nation that can be respectable. His argument is, if they can't do that, why would you do anything for them? Because your support, your help, it's not going to do anything but make them stronger. And in other words, Benjamin Netanyahu was saying, you make them stronger, and that puts your friend, your ally, Israel, at a huge disadvantage. The threat increases. The Bible says in the book of Genesis that God blesses those who bless Israel, and he curses those who curse Israel. I've been thinking a lot, and I encourage you to go to blogtalkradio.com/whatsimportantnow and listen to our messages, our programs on the Blood Moon. As we are approaching that time again of the Blood Moons, it's not some crazy prophetic thing that I'm throwing out there. NASA has confirmed that there would be a series of blood moons. We are in the middle of that as we witnessed last year the exact same thing. Historically, when you take a look at the blood moons, the tetrad, so to speak, what you find is you find something has happened to Israel, something, a big event. It's not necessarily negative, although it has been, but a major event that has affected Israel takes place. And I've been thinking about this deal, and I'm not prophesying anything. I'm not trying to predict anything. I'm allowing you into my mind a little bit. I've been thinking about these blood moons, and I've been thinking about Benjamin Netanyahu, who's speaking before our Congress, and I've been thinking about how the president's administration, John Kerry, is out there, Secretary of State, trying to work a deal with Iran. I've been thinking about ISIS and how ISIS is killing Christians, and I've been thinking about all the turmoil that is in the Middle East, and I'll be the first to agree that the Middle East has been in turmoil for a while, and I would say that the only stability found in the Middle East, for the most part, is Israel. Although, it was a whole lot more stable before we started making some of the decisions we've made as a country. The Middle East is a mess. We didn't always like the leader that was in place, but we didn't have what we have today. Our troops have been pulled out. We can argue whether that's good or bad. The point is, it's a mess over there. Smack dab in the middle is a country that needs America like it's never needed America. But if I could give you a glimpse, and we're going to continue this conversation next week, if I could give you a glimpse into something here, the Bible predicts that there comes a time where Israel will stand alone. And I'm talking, Israel will never be alone because God is there, but I'm talking about politically, maybe militarily, they'll stand alone. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to tell you something. America has always stood, and for years we have questioned what in the world could happen where Israel would stand alone and America would stand by idle. But aren't we already witnessing some of that already? All it takes is another president with the same mentality that President Obama has had for another 8 years. Now you're talking the span of 16 years, and wow, things can change. We're teaching our kids in our universities and in our schools, the education, the things being taught in the classrooms, changing. American history's not being taught as it should be, and all these things are happening right before our very eyes, and our perception as a nation is changing. And Reverend Franklin Graham has stood up and declared that America is now a secular nation, and all these things are happening right before our very eyes, and we somehow think there won't be consequences. Well, hear me clearly today. I believe there will be consequences. I don't know when, but I think we're already seeing hints of them today. We're going to continue this conversation next week about the historical relationship between Israel and America, and we're going to lead right up to the present day. I encourage you to go along with for the ride as we continue this discussion. With that being said, if you'd like to contact us by email, do so whatsimportantnowradio@gmail.com, whatsimportantnowradio@gmail.com. You can write us by writing What's Important Now Radio, 8901 Good Hope Pike, Lost Creek, West Virginia, 26385. Also, check us out on Facebook. Go to blogtalkradio.com/whatsimportantnow for our archived messages. And as I said, we will continue this conversation next week. But for now, well, I'm out of time. And as always, I want to encourage you to fight the good fight of faith, contend for the faith. There is a cause. It does matter, ladies and gentlemen, and it is important now. I would argue more important now than ever. Okay, I'm Tom Sears. It's been my absolute honor to be here with you. Look forward to hearing from you. Until next week, may everything you put your hands to prosper and be blessed, your incoming and your outgoing. Take care.